Blog Talk Radio.
This is Patty Hellstrand, and this is KWOD Radio, and we're on live. It's Sunday. Can you believe it's a week already? I know I can never believe it's a week already. But hey, it's not Monday yet. That's always a good thing. So sit back and relax. Or you can get all just crazy and call us. I know. That would be scary, wouldn't it? Guest call-in number 714-242-5145. Please don't be shy. We're not. Oh, this is the Alan Joe Show, and we are on the next space. Hey, Joe. I'm Joe, and this is
Al. There's been a lot going on this week in space news. We've got quite a list of stuff for you this week. Well, what?
I'm getting your show up, man.
Well, let's get all the station notifications
I
up over. Okay,
come on. This
is KWOD Radio, WOD Media Production, coming to you every Sunday night, 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, talking about the latest news about and in space. We talk about everything. We talk about stuff from NASA, international news. We talk about new space news. And then we have in our second hour, we do some commentary. We discuss some of the different things that are going on, some of our opinions. You know, everybody's got one. Always play nice.
Contest grand prize,
They're offering a MakerBot Replicator 2 Desktop 3D Printer. First prize, 3 spools of MakerBot PLA filament and your MakerBot Mars design will be featured on the Thingiverse. Second place, 2 spools of MakerBot PLA filament and your MakerBot design will be featured on the Thingiverse. Third place, you get 1 MakerBot PLA filament and your MakerBot Mars design will be featured on Thingiverse. Now, of course...
That's how you say that again, Melinda.
Oh, hell no. Hell no. Because they give you some other links. They show you where you can get to the full details of the contest and so forth. They've got a MakerBot blog. They'll be talking about it as well. And there's also a forum thread for the contest. And, you know, and there's a bunch of, they even provide a link to a place to get the facts from NASA at mars.nasa.gov. So there's a lot of information out there. Check it out. It's an interesting contest. Particularly for those in the new industry of 3D printing.
Well, I have to say, you know, that's a cool industry all itself.
It is. It's growing like gangbusters, picking up speed, and so forth. There's a lot of exciting things that they can do. I mean, I've even seen articles that talk about 3D printing buildings, for crying out loud. So, and there was a actually a video about a year ago, I think, I want to say, where they actually showed a construction robot building a wall in a median of a roadway, I believe. And generally speaking, it was 3D printing. You know, I mean, they're building something out of components, so it's a limited effort.
I saw a couple of small ones that made it help on this week.
Well, here locally, doesn't Post have what they use for printing out stuff?
Yeah, he's very excited about that.
Yes, he is.
That would be such a cool idea because you can make your own little...
You know who else has got one? I was talking to, what's her name? Krista... Come on.
Crawford.
Krista Crawford. She's got one that she uses for her customers. Or at least she ordered it. The last time I spoke to her, she had ordered it. She was all excited about what she could do with it in printing designs and things like that. So it's really...
Everybody's getting on the wagon.
They are getting on the wagon, on the 3D printing wagon. So it's interesting to see. On some historical news, also from NASA, ULA has been taking a meeting from Elon Musk and actually from Congress recently. Well, sure. And ULA has decided to disclose some of their pricing information with regard to the big contract that Elon Musk was challenging from SpaceX. Now, they said that the per launch price to the government is approximately $225 million. Now, this is a function of the block buy contract as well as some pre-existing backlog. So it's really kind of a nebulous number. Now, they go into some more detail and they talk about some of the actual stuff. 36 launch vehicle cores concluded in June of last year. It's an $11 billion contract. You know, check out the article. Some of it makes sense and some of it just sounds like, I mean, they go into some numbers. I am not a congressional budget person. And I gotta tell you, the government talk speak here kind of goes in circles. There are some numbers that can give you a good idea of what's going on if you're a little bit more familiar with the way this is. But basically, it's more expensive than SpaceX. A lot more expensive than SpaceX.
That's the bottom line here.
Yeah, but even so, the reality is that ULA signed the contract before SpaceX was certified. So, you know, yeah, it's one sandbox is throwing sand at the other sandbox. You know, I mean, the dust is going to settle here soon enough. But, yeah, I mean, ULS is bowing to congressional pressure. Everybody wants to know. Yeah, so, you know. In other news related, you've got people in Congress and in the Air Force are starting to take the idea of a U.S. rocket engine serious. Space Flight Now has an article from June 1st, where an independent review panel commissioned by the Secretary of Defense to evaluate the idea, this idea of a different engine made by U.S. people to take the place of the RD-180. Now, and their concerns are valid. The Atlas V rocket system is now at the mercy of Russia and the courts, as sanctions may cut off the rocket supply of engines in the wake of Russia's annexation of Crimea and Russia's continued incursions into Ukraine. So, you know, political, territorial squabbles are now affecting NASA's ability, or at least threatening to affect NASA's ability to do business as usual with the ULA. So we'll see how that plays out as time goes on. But NASA isn't just being buffeted by those things. We had a great discovery this week. Back on the 2nd, Space.com put out Godzilla of Earth, ancient planet, 17 times heavier than our world is discovered. Now, this thing's big. Now, when they say 17 times bigger,
how big
is
it?
This sucker is, it weighs 17 times more than the Earth. No, I didn't say it right. It weighs 17 times as much as the Earth. Now, as I recall, it's 17 times the Earth's weight.
So, in other words,
it's 17 times bigger than the Earth. It's kind of a these guys think they got a
sunlight star.
Yeah. So, but it's a big planet. It's a huge planet. Check out the article. It gets some nice artist renderings. The ability of us being able to do anything about this planet, it's exciting that they found it. But I got to tell you, I wouldn't want to live there.
Why?
Well, because if I tried to stand on that planet, I'd get squashed by its gravity. Squashed right into my shoes.
That would be nothing.
Probably not. I'd just kind of be a blood spot on the ground.
A big blood spot.
A big, well, no. Well, at that kind of gravity, I seriously doubt
it. Messy,
okay. It would be messy. I seriously doubt I'd be able to get out of the spacecraft. You know, assuming the spacecraft got there. Air and Space Smithsonian had an article this week talking about the new Space Telescope. The James Webb Telescope will see out the universe's edges. They're looking about it being 100 times more powerful than Hubble. Using infrared technologies and so forth. It's got four different scientific instruments we'll carry. Built by the European Space Agency, Canadian Space Agency, University of Arizona, and Lockheed Martin and NASA. It arrived, they're beginning assembly of the final thing. And so it's going to be interesting what kind of pictures. You know, we've all enjoyed the pictures from the Hubble, as it has really delivered some gorgeous images and so forth. So a lot of stuff.
Every one of you own.
What?
So you should find it. Find all these beautiful pictures and take a look at them, because you know what? It came from American technology.
Well, yeah. So definitely stuff to keep track of. Now, you know what? Next up on our list.
The beast is back.
No, we'll get to that in a minute.
Oh, okay.
Did you know NASA had a space boat? NASA had a space boat. Back in 2009. No. It's just a little bit smaller. Well, actually, I wonder if it's about the same size. Titan, back in 2009, was considering a very first space boat. Basically a spacecraft that would land on Titan, which I believe is Saturn's moon. Okay. And it would land and then fly the seas on Titan. These aren't seas of water. These are oceans and lakes of methane, liquid methane. Well, it'd be like gas. It'd be like smoke and gas. Well, you, only because you don't want to light a match.
I mean, how else would you, like, set the rocket off under the, fire?
The sad thing is that the article talks about how back in 2009, everybody was abuzz about the idea of this boat going to Titan, landing on Titan and cruising the seas, or the oceans of methane, lakes of methane, if you will, and so forth. But the mission actually lost out funding-wise to, I believe, it was NASA's Cassini mission, I want to say. Yeah, lost out to a mission to Jupiter. So definitely, they've got some, nice little artist conception there, and how to explore extraterrestrial lakes. Definitely be an interesting idea. I'll tell you what. You know, there's, again, like you say, there's our tax dollars at work. Speaking of tax dollars, okay, the NRC, I forget what that stands for. It's another government agency. Generated a report this last week, or at least they released a report, and they talked about NASA's plan. So we're still under NASA. Well, I guess I got another one here, too. Yeah. I got something you don't got. You're not going to respond to that, okay. Fist.org gave us links to the article. They gave us a little brief preview. The 285-page report, it took them that long to basically say that if NASA is to make progress in a human spaceflight program, it needs to go big or go home and get to the Martian surface. But here's the rub. They also talk about that, you know, just going to Mars isn't going to cut it. This one-shot deal of going to Mars is not going to do it. It literally will not make the grade. And, you know, when they say ambitious program, they're not talking about just going to Mars. They're saying that if you're going to go to Mars, you've got to do some stuff to get there on a regular basis. And in between the lines, it suggests that a single mission just to go to Mars and come home is a bad idea. And they don't go into a whole lot of detail, but, you know, it's definitely worth reading. I think they give a link to the article. But this is it's a common complaint that I've actually heard from people over the last few years. Yeah, it does. From the LA Times.
Yeah.
It'll still get you to the report.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is people are frustrated because NASA needs to not only go to Mars, or we as a species need to not only go to Mars, we need to go to the moon. We need to then go to Mars. We need to get to an asteroid. We need to get to Titan, and we need to get to Callisto. We need to visit the planet as a species. And we can't get there if people are going to be sending these one-off missions that do nothing but are basically PR scientific efforts and then never going to happen again for $5 billion a pop. You know, we've got to have something. Here's the Washington Post article. I've got you. Says NASA strategy can't get humans to Mars. And again, I agree. It's really, they make some very poignant points in the article. Again, encouraging you to take a look and check it out. Okay. All right. For all you fearmongers out there, Scientific American. Article B-Asteroids to Fly by Earth. Big old asteroid. Big honking huge asteroid. okay? It's going to come within 777,000 miles from Earth. And for all you metric folks, that's 1.25 million kilometers. Or at its closest approach, about three and a quarter times the distance from the Earth to the Moon. So it's not even going to come close to the Moon. But is there a chance of impact on this pass? But at 1,100 feet, this puppy is huge. So, but yeah, and, you know, we're starting to see more and more. More and more NASA and other detection organizations are finding asteroids and things like this that are putting our planet at risk. We are realizing just how tenuous our existence is on Earth, and the reality that this isn't just, this is the perfectly safe planet to live on.
What, this one where we're living on right now?
Yeah. I mean, between, well, there's that. I mean, that does complicate things.
They complicate things.
And not just people, we got civilized people.
Really?
There's our whole problem.
Yep.
Well, civilization of Earth, you know, that's the whole problem. I mean, they're throwing all this.
I don't know. I've seen a lot of uncivilized.
Well, that's their word.
Their word.
We humans call ourselves civilized.
Yeah.
I mean, we got technology. Go figure. Speaking of technology, NASA.gov, JPL.NASA.gov, has a neat article there where they talk about one of the things that was in the news this week. Read it right there. NASA has started using lasers to send communications data from the ISS to Earth. And they actually had a high-definition video sent from the ISS to Earth using the new laser communications instrument. Now, many of you remember, if you're science fiction fans, many of you science fiction fans will remember that the craft in this movie 2001 used lasers to communicate with Earth, and they had to have their antenna really zeroed in on Earth in order to get their laser communications technique to actually function well. And if you recall, many other shows over the years have used lasers for communicating with Earth. Well, NASA actually has executed, as far as we know, the very first transmission. They call it Hello World. Video message was first 175 megabit communication for the laser comm science, the OPALS optical payload for laser comm science and technology demonstration that allows NASA test methods for communication with future spacecraft using higher bandwidth than radio waves. And of course, it's a test bed for other technologies as well.
Oh, I don't understand. That's how we already did this. That's
kind of thing. We've used lasers for optical communication on Earth. They're working on optical computers based on laser beams flashing back and forth. It is faster. But the biggest thing is light can carry a broader bandwidth than can radio waves. And in fact, most of us may know, people may not understand, that an optical fiber, which carries light, can carry a lot more data than can a copper wire. Hence why cable...
Oh, okay. So here. Yeah, maybe people don't know that.
Yeah, some people won't. They haven't recognized it. I didn't until just a few years ago. I didn't realize that. I figured it was all radio waves anyway, whether you're sending it via light or... Well, yeah, but pretty soon they'll be using optical wire, because it'll be valuable for reuse. You can melt that down just like you can copper, so... And, of course, you're shaking your head like...
You can plastic anywhere.
And pretty soon... And pretty soon?
I saw a lot of plastic.
Okay. Well, there's plastic everywhere. What do you think about this? Pretty soon people will be collecting... Here's an idea for you. They'll be collecting credit cards to be melted down into fiber for 3D printers so they can print their own glass fiber. Plastic glass fiber.
That's a good thing to do with credit cards.
There you go. Also from NASA this week, we have an article from America Space. This is a website I haven't been to before.
For each one that you missed, I'm gonna really bite you for.
Ooh, promises. They shared an article with Chris Ferguson, who was the last shuttle commander. And in this, they have part two of an interview that talks about training to fly on Boeing's private CST-100 space taxi. And it's a one-on-one interview. That link is www.americaspace.com/D=61840. The next one should have those. Next thing is, and this is interesting, you know, I've been following in the UK, and we talked either last week or the week before about how the UK has a program called Skylon. Now, it's a private development program. They're getting some funding from the UK, but they're, the United Kingdom could have a spaceport by 2018. Pending
spaceport would be fun.
What?
It would be fun.
That could be fun. I mean, we've got a couple of spaceports active in the U.S. now. There's actually some... there was an article that I ran across, maybe it was last week we talked about, that Russia's building another spaceport. I think we talked about it last week, unless I missed up then. Again, that's another thing that I've talked about before. But anyway, this spaceport, they're hoping to have it active by 2018, pending a report, hypothesis to fly it, and a feasibility study, just like NASA. They've got to go through all the bureaucratic garbage. But they're hoping to have it up and running by 2018, which could be interesting, guys. You know, they could go from the New Mexico spaceport on over to the UK spaceport. You know, no more having to try and hunt down that, what was the SST that used to fly out of the East Coast many, 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 many moons ago for thousands and thousands of dollars. Imagine Virgin Galactic making that run. I can see that. I can see that, Virgin Galactic making a run across the pond. You know, to get up to suborbit and then glide down to the UK spaceport. You know, that could be interesting. That would be very sexy. Of course, you like that guy anyway. I ran into something new I hadn't heard about this week.
That's hard to believe.
And, you know, I like to keep up on a lot of stuff on this. And in our opportunities to participate...
Well,
this was before that. Yeah, it was. Like I said, well, your list is old. You were sleeping doing other stuff. So here it is. Anyway, Mars Initiative. MarsInitiative.org. Okay. There you go. MarsInitiative.org. This is an organization, it's a space advocacy group, and their global fundraising organization. They're dedicated to raising money for the Mars Prize Fund, the first mission that lands humans on Mars. Now, I didn't know about this group. And they're connected to the ISDC, Mars Society, Space Midcast, to a lot of different things. They got a whole boatload of articles out here. But as
it... Huh?
Oh, yeah. They're out of focus images. They got a little slider on the front. But check them out. It's another way. You know, you get the Mars Society. You've got Mars Drive, which is a function of, I believe... there's Mars One, there's Mars Inspiration, there's Mars Direct, which is, I believe, the NASA way to get to Mars. So some interesting stuff here. They got some nice photos, a lot of links, talked about themselves, of course, and a few things to think about there. So anyway,
now where are we going? It's hard to know where you're going.
Oh, I see what I did. I jumped down. Yeah, that was me. I got out of order. We were talking about international news, and we're going to go to... So anyway, in private space news, New Space. For those of you that may not have known about this, New Space is private companies doing stuff like SpaceX or X4 or Virgin Galactic. And in fact, our first story up tonight is we've got some new contenders.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
New Kids on the Block.
New Kids on the Block, which is actually really exciting because one of these New Kids on the Block is another country, although I'm not so sure it's a good idea for them, but we'll get to that in just a moment. Web companies, Google, Facebook, are from a... Okay, that was on a blooper tape. We'll be releasing sometime soon. What they're doing is they're for $1 billion, they're creating satellites that are going and doing stuff for the networks. They've got a great image on the link.
You're talking about what?
Well, what they're doing is they're using the satellites to embrace what the satellites can offer. In other words, Google bought drone maker Titan Aerospace last month, and now it's in talks to buy Skybox Imaging. So that startup creates high-res satellite images for $1 billion. Now, last month, they hired Brian Hulse, chief tech officer at O3B Networks, which has launched special satellites to drive broadcast signals that would power new internet services in developing countries. Now, I think many of us have heard, and I'll dig in and find the article later on, that Google is wanting to deliver broadband around the world, starting with getting cheap broadband for developing countries. And that's a cool idea. But this is what we're talking about. Now, so they're doing this. We're talking about image companies doing other stuff. And the article goes on to talk mostly about Skybox doing imaging satellites. And these are small little guys, so they can take all sorts of cool images. Also, a Japanese drink company. Yeah, and they're wanting to advertise on the moon. And so they're wanting to take their Pocari Sweat. Okay, that can't be right.
You're saying it in American style.
Yeah, okay. the guy's name, the beverage maker Otsuka Pharmaceutical, is planning to turn Infinity and Beyond to the final frontier of advertising. They're working hand-in-hand with SpaceX to choreograph the stunt. And basically, they want to put a 1-kilogram titanium cam partially filled with powdered Pocari Sweat, a Japanese sports drink, on the moon. At least, that's the goal. So
I got sports drinks on the moon, all right.
Well, you know, it would be waiting for the astronauts.
I mean, look at that picture.
I know. That's where I am. Oh, you know, if they're going to put that can on there, then it's got to have a little mini rocket motor on it. Pocari Sweat Mini.
Okay, here's a question.
Sure.
Okay. If you have a can, it's on the moon, you pop the top, what happens?
Oh, it's going to spray everywhere.
That'd be funny.
Just like a cat. Actually, it's only partially filled with soda.
There's
a couple of things.
They've
got an image here that breaks out the capsule to show not only will whoever opens the can get an interesting look at life in 21st century Asia, but they could theoretically use moon water to mix together a refreshing, ambiguously citrusy beverage. So it's actually the mix for the beverage. So it's not a full pump can. But it would be an interesting publicity stunt.
Ambiguously citrusy. Apparently,
it's a publicity stunt. Okay.
Hey,
so, alright. Now, here's some things. You got, also in the news, Mars One and Copenhagen suborbitals are joining brains for a few hours. They're actually coordinating.
That could hurt.
Yeah, that could hurt. Yeah, they've divided, what they've done, they're working closely, they're working on the plans for the concept sketch of basically a glass habitation module for Mars. It's interesting because it's modular, and they're talking about actually building these modules out of the regolith, basically Mars dirt. They're talking about making glass out of Mars dirt, which could be interesting. Yeah, if they can scoop up enough of the dirt and the habitat. I gotta say, you know, it's an interesting design.
Yeah.
It really is. And they've got a lander shown in the images. It's an interesting concept. So, yeah, check that one out. Also, from Iran. In circles, I guess. I don't know. Iran is actually building a spacecraft. Okay? It's a little bitty guy. Tehran is working on plans to build a spacecraft to send more living creatures into lower orbits in the future. So basically, it's a suborbital spaceflight craft, probably just tipping their toes into the space. And of course, they'll probably have to repoint it to get their, for the critters to do their prayers every 6 hours or so. But, in January last year, they announced that they had sent a monkey into space. In mid-March, they announced the launch of a rocket carrying a test capsule designed to house a monkey. The capsule had been unveiled and thing. They've already sent small animals into space, rats, turtles, worms. Really? This is just another step on their plan. They want to put astronauts in space in 2024. Iranian astronauts. They want to put Iranian astronauts in space by 2024. And, you know, I wrote an essay some time ago where I talked about other nations getting into space. Can you tell I'm ignoring your comments? Probably. Yeah, I know. You're going to keep going anyway. And one of the challenges, one of the points that I made in the article talked about the idea that as China, well, India, which, and the ESA organization, and Russia have all found out, and I think China is going to find out very soon, as a nation launches an aggressive space program, they find that as long as that program is based on national pride, it gets really expensive. And getting public support to keep going becomes problematic after a while. NASA is fighting against a dwindling support now and dwindling ideas to resurge that support. But the bottom line is, the more you get down that path, the more challenged your space organization is going to be to gain funding for the additional science missions. Basically, the crux of the essay was to say that as long as government programs are geared towards science missions only, with problems that they face in that regard, they're going to end up in dwindling results. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're on Facebook. You may look at
that. Oh, you're ignoring what I'm saying anyway.
Oh, okay. All right. So moving on from Iran. It's time for our station identification and our break mid-show. Gone through the big news items of this week. I actually had somebody talk, I was talking to somebody about our show this week, and they asked me the question, well, why don't you talk about the images that we get, or a lot of the discoveries and things.
Like
the Kepler images, the Hubble pictures. We've got pictures from Cassini coming in almost on a daily basis. So there are just literally too many of these images that come in on a daily basis, much less a weekly basis, for me to cover these kinds of images. Now, we do talk about many of the things that are happening, like the asteroid we talked about earlier, those are bigger news items that they're just, granted, they're we're getting almost an asteroid report almost once every couple of weeks now that could have come through and portends a potential risk to our planet. But so our focus is primarily on manned programs and manned program processes here, but also on the occasional item like Iran is moving forward in their plans to build a space program. China, we're following their program to a certain degree. And there are other countries who are beginning to dip their toes into the space industry and see what they can actually accomplish. But they're all struggling to make progress in an arena where it's expensive. It's god-awful expensive to go to space, except the way SpaceX is doing. And by comparison, SpaceX is orders of magnitude cheaper now. Can you imagine when they get that booster online regularly?
Yeah.
I mean, when they get the reusable booster online.
They get boosted regularly.
Okay. All right. KWOD Radio, a WOD media company, offers the Next Space radio program. Do so every week, Sunday night, 7 p.m. Mountain Standard.
Yeah, right now. It's
Mountain Standard Time.
Load.
Again, this is Patty Holstrand, and this is K-Wad Radio, and we're on live. And this is the Alan Joe Show. We're talking about Next Base. This is the commentary area.
Here's part of our show.
Well, there's been two articles this week talk about the plans that NASA currently works with and looking towards space. Now, just to kind of set the stage, the two articles, first off, in the Washington Post. Okay. It's an overseas, apparently, thing. One China Times. Okay. You want to link up? Okay. Links up. This is from overseas, from Xinhua News Agency. And they're saying that NASA, the U.S. government, needs to reexamine its space policy that blocks NASA from working on bilateral projects with China. And this looks like the same... the same report we were talking about earlier that talks about NASA's vision needs to change, needs to be adjusted for the future in order to make progress in space. Some of the things that they talk about in that report are funding. We all know about that. They talk about the vision. They talk about the idea that this great big god-awful huge rocket to go to Mars may not necessarily be the best idea. And in conversations I've had recently in the past few months, it's becoming increasingly clear that also echoed in our second article from spaceflightinsider.com, their opinion, the war of the worlds to the moon or to Mars. Moon Society says we should go to the moon first. Mars Society says we should go to Mars first. Actually, we shouldn't even go back to the moon for any reason. We've got projects currently. You got Inspiration Mars, which is one wanting to send a couple round trip around Mars and come back home. You've got Mars One, which wants to settle Mars by sending a massive ship and several precursor missions that would drop Dragon capsules that would become a habitat for the follow-on human settlement. We've got on the web a host of other projects currently in the works. The Jupiter Society to try and settle the moons of Callisto, Ganymede. You've got another Facebook group out there looking to settle the moon of Saturn, Titan. You've got people who are suggesting that we tap into Phobos and Deimos of Mars orbit. And yet all of these missions, every single one of them that I'm seeing, are talking about a single god-awful ship to go direct. Now, I really got a real problem with this, because every time NASA sends a rocket into space to go beyond Earth orbit, it basically comes with a $5 billion price tag. And that's whether you're sending two people, four people, or seven people. And that's just the minimum to design a specialty rocket, to design the specialty lander, to design all the food, the radiation gear, the protective gear, the water, all the stuff that goes into a single purpose mission to go to a single destination. Now, I've seen a lot of videos recently that talk about the idea that it just is patently wrong for single-purpose missions. It'd be like buying a 747, flying it from New York to St. Louis, throwing it away, and then getting another plane there and flying the rest of the way to L.A. You know, or even worse, buying one, driving a limo all the way to L.A. and setting it on fire and getting another one to come home.
Setting it on fire.
just destroying it. You know, I mean, that's what NASA does. It's the single mission mentality. You can't go to the moon or and Mars together. Why not?
So you're trying to tell me, people, that you're not going to call in and argue about this?
I hope they do. I hope they call in and argue on this point, because I got to tell you, the reality is that business as usual for NASA, business as usual for any society that advocates a single launch or even a multiple launch to build a single rocket in Earth orbit to go anywhere beyond the moon is flat out stupid. Now say it right to your face. It is patently a waste of money. Talking $5 billion for any mission to go anywhere beyond the moon.
You know, the thing is just, we don't have that kind of money.
No, we don't.
It's all going to healthcare.
Well, we can't afford to pay the taxes for the $5 billion mission to go to the to Mars, because we're paying extra taxes for Obamacare.
Yeah.
Okay. Or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into that. And let me just share a little bit with you. I did a little research this week, anticipating this particular episode, because I wanted to share with everybody a little piece of information. Now, we've all been really proud of the fact that we send Progress ships and Dragon ships and we've got the CST getting ready to go up to the ISS. To the space station. We've got a host of spacecraft that deliver supplies to the space station. Now, I took a spreadsheet, and I wanted to kind of find out how many ships we've sent.
Actually, think you're sharing that, are you?
No, not yet. But what I am going to do...
Yeah, put up on your own website.
Yeah. What I am going to do is we'll be launching a website soon. And I want to talk about just the modules that have gone up and been destroyed. Now, we can talk about the Soyuz ships that have gone up, and quite honestly, the Dragon, SpaceX, has actually sent eight spacecraft into orbit since 2010. And all eight spacecraft have come back. That's a pretty good thing. In addition, we've had China has launched three of their Shenzhou into orbit. Those have come back. NASA sent the shuttle, last shuttle, went out in 2011. Endeavour and Discovery were launched that year and came home safely. We have had a boatload of Russian Soyuz. Okay, correction. 20. We have 19 Soyuz craft who carried crew members up and back to the ISS since October of 2010. So that's an interesting thing. Now, each of those spacecraft were basically, they went up, of course, to the ISS, and then they came back down, and it was basically one mission. Now, those Soyuz, generally, they've got, what, two on-site at the ISS at any one time. I know they've got a Progress on-site, because They use it to fill with trash. But here's the other thing. Arianespace has launched 4 ATV cargo craft. One every year for the last 4 years. Orbital Sciences has sent 5 Cygnus spacecraft since October of 2014. So we've got 4 ATVs, 5 Cygnus, 4 Japanese HTVs. Orion is actually sending one up in December this year, so it's not up there yet. And then the Russians have sent up 17 Progress ships. Now, mind you, this is just since 2010. So in the last 4 years, collectively, we have sent up and destroyed 31 spacecraft have gone up into space, delivered cargo, and burned up in the atmosphere. 31 spacecraft in 4 years.
And how much space?
Well, that's just it. The prices, the cost of these spacecraft are pretty hefty. We're probably looking at, well, let's see. I'm guessing here that we're looking at a minimum cost of probably $100 million. No. $100 million, that's $3.1 billion on one-off missions. While that's a great sentiment for that $3.1 billion, and keep in mind, that figure is low. I'm estimating low. All right?
That was, so in other words,
it's probably more than that.
Yeah. I'm trying to drink people up.
Yeah. But 31 spacecraft have been set up to take supplies up. Now, let's keep this in mind. Now, 31 spacecraft, and they're taking an average of about a ton, sometimes more, about 2,000 to 2,500 pounds of air, food, fuel, supplies. They're taking up experiments. And then what they're doing is they're filling, the ISS is filling these things up with this trash and burning up the ship plus the trash in the atmosphere. They've done this 31 times in the last 4 years. Now keep in mind, the space station has been occupied for what, 10 years now? And they've been doing this for 10 years.
Yeah.
And we're only counting the last 4. I don't even want to think about what those numbers are. The amount of food, the amount of... Well, yeah, and here's the thing. This smacks of an infrastructure waste. Absolute infrastructure waste. Now, granted.
That's very
waste. Well, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I don't know what it would take. But at a minimum, these ships have enough fuel to deorbit, which means they've got to slow down. That's a substantial burn. Couldn't they be put into a companion orbit of the ISS and simply build a fuel depot?
Yeah, it takes a fuel depot with the...
Or just think. think about the spare parts this would be building. Yeah. Now, I am not so naive as to think that you could take 31 of these craft, move them over to a companion orbit, and be able to continue to control them for very long without sending up additional fuel. And 31 spacecraft.
But you still organize them for those that go back and forth.
Well, that's true. But here's the thing. What would we do with those 31 spacecraft if we had them?
We're not going to have 31 of them. There's something wrong with some of them.
Well, but here's a question.
Okay. Yeah.
The whole point of the conversation tonight is what's wrong with the vision that NASA is currently reporting? What's wrong with the vision of Mars One or Mars Inspiration? What's wrong with the vision of any of these organizations who are touted to be a nonprofit who want to send this big PR campaign of send a ship to Mars, send a ship to Moon, send a ship wherever the hell they're going to send it?
Well, the problem is the status is the same old thing.
Yeah.
It's a one-off.
These are all one-offs.
They only consider reusable alternatives.
But it's not just about reusable. It's about coming up with a vision that brings everybody back to the table together.
Right.
Here's something else to think about. If Mars One does, or let's say Mars Inspiration, the estimate for their trip has been put in the range of $5 billion. Okay? Mars One, the estimate for their program is over $5 billion.
Okay, where are you going here?
Okay. Then you look at the Mars Society's deal. I haven't seen a number posted for them recently, but I'm willing to bet they're going to be using similar hardware. They've got similar development costs. You've got similar stuff to be sent. I'd say it's probably within the same $5 billion range. Okay? But each one of these is a single mission going to a single destination. Now, I understand that Bas Lansdorf wants to be the guy to go. I understand that Tito from Mars Inspiration wants to be the guy to make it happen. I understand that Rob Zubrin wants to be the guy to make it happen. But couldn't they make it happen together? Couldn't they pool their resources and get together with, heaven forbid, the Moon Society, or whoever it is that's touting. I'm sorry, it's not the Moon Society, it's Golden Spike and Space Adventures. And heaven forbid the Russians want to go back to the Moon, so do the Chinese.
What? Oh my God!
Why not a consolidated vision for space?
But you see, it's always been this way. They was always been this way. What does that mean? They can't stop the cycle?
I agree, and I think it's high time that they did.
I mean, honestly, you know, we yell about the man.
Here's something to think about. If you've got Mars One and you've got Mars Inspiration, and they're both trying to get contributions from financiers, from business people, from crowdsourcing, they're not going to get the same dollars. They're competing.
Exactly. They're trying to hit up the same people.
They're trying to hit up the same people, and there just isn't that much money to go around. And the reality is they need to pool their resources. And here's a suggestion. I'll throw this out, guys. Mars Inspiration is talking about the 700-plus people that they've whittled their astronaut corps down to, okay? Now, they've got personnel ready to go. Now, Mars Inspiration, what did I say? I said Mars Inspiration has whittled it down to 700 people. Mars One has whittled their applicants down. And so they've got a few couples. But and both of them are looking at ways to do additional fundraising. But if they combine their resources, I'll bet they could do the Mars leg in a lot less money, and they could probably hit their mark a lot sooner. If they also worked on an old plan. I remember many years ago, several years ago, I don't know, but it was talked about that you really shouldn't launch a Mars ship from Earth. The cost in propellant is huge. It's absolutely huge. But if you take and you build a ship in lunar orbit or in Lagrange point next to the moon, you actually have a better chance of getting to Mars with less money. But that would mean you wouldn't be able to do the same fundraising on Earth. Or could you? It is my belief that a single vision that starts with the ISS, it's already built, it makes a great way station, and we should use it as the beginning of our infrastructure. Now the Russians are talking about abandoning the station in 2020 or 2024. China is building their own station. For God's sake, guys, invite China to join the sandbox, for crying out loud. Give them the specs, let them add modules to the International Space Station, and make it a waypoint for interplanetary travel. For gosh sakes, guys, if we want to make progress, we need to come up with a shared vision. Everybody agrees, as far as I can tell, that our planet, our species, needs to become a multi-planetary species. But if we're going to hang our hopes on 20 or 40 year projects for space solar power or nuclear fusion rockets or light speed rockets and or ion drive rockets that can get us to Mars or to Titan or even Callisto faster, you know, that's all well and good, and those projects should continue to be developed. But they should be developed as a function of a common vision. We shouldn't go to Mars first. We shouldn't be trying single-use missions to Titan. It's fantasy. Blatantly fantasy. And in this economy, with these people, with countries struggling to get into space, but they can't raise the money. They can't do what's been done before. Why should they have to reinvent the wheel? A single vision that builds infrastructure to get us first to the moon with a settlement on the moon. That they then build and supply, or rather, they don't build, but they assemble a Mars craft from used vehicles and a few new parts. We'd have to add some new parts. We've got to have something that's going to carry the fuel. We've got to have something that's going to, a module that's going to protect the astronauts during transit. These are requirements, and we don't have those yet. But a common vision that can get these modules into lunar orbit in preparation for the Lagrange point launch makes a lot more sense than launching single missions straight to Mars. That's just irresponsible. At the same time, it's been said and shown the Delta V requirements for a launch to Mars from Lagrange Point is a hell of a lot less expensive than going from Earth, or even Earth orbit for that matter. Now, there are a lot of things coming down the pike right now that lead into just the kind of infrastructure that we need for this. For tonight, I want to focus on just the vision. I want to establish a vision that we really need to think about. I mean, if you search the web, it's not hard. I mean, there's a lunar cycler under construction. They're making progress, for crying out loud. A lunar cycler. Now, that gives us a way to go from the Earth to the Moon. All you can do is catch up with it from Earth orbit, and then you slow down from the cycler. But the thing is, it would have supplies on board, either from Earth or from the Moon. It's bus service. It's a space subway, for crying out loud.
Oh,
why aren't we talking about this? I'll bet we could get Subway sandwiches to sponsor it and have somebody up there. They could have a store up there serving Subway sandwiches.
Yeah. Wouldn't you like to stop at the host at the gas depot and have a shot of
Space
sub.
Space There you go.
Subway.
There you go. I mean, you know, I could see organizations like FedEx and UPS competing over space tug cargo craft that would be hauling air, food, and water from the Moon over to the ISS. Why should we be launching all of the food, air, and water and fuel supplies from Earth? We should have a depot on the Moon that does that, but it's going to take a couple of years to build that.
Well,
it really does.
Of course it should. I mean, it's taken 30 years to do the same old, so you know what?
No, it's taken almost 50 years.
Yeah,
we're pushing 50 since NASA was engaged.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually, since NASA was established.
Well, yeah.
But a single... Tonight's commentary is... I'm starting to hear calls from other people for a single vision to space.
That's good.
And yeah, that's good, but everybody is still rebelling. Where's the response from Mars One? Where's the response from Mars Inspiration? Where's the response from the Mars Society? Where's the response from Marston or Elon or even from... Space Adventures or any of these that are going to depend on that infrastructure being in place for their missions.
Exactly. That's because if they're not going to be pushed to do this, they won't do it. Mm-hmm. Because they want to do their own thing.
They really do.
Their ball. Their own deal there.
I cannot imagine. You know, we talk about the price of a single-shot Mars mission, or a single-shot Jovian mission, or a Saturnian mission, all being over $5 billion, and typically these are 20-year development plans. These are not quick things. In 20 years, we can be on the Moon in 4 years. We could have a depot and a settlement on the Moon in 4 years.
Yeah. Still be in your guys' lifetime.
It would be in, you know, Buzz Aldrin has talked about wanting to go to Mars for years.
Yeah.
This man's getting old enough now that any current, any project currently on the books to go to Mars, it's going to be too late for this guy.
Yeah, it's gonna be too late.
He's never going to make it.
Hey, Buzz, would you like to go? 4 years?
You know, I remember a show years ago, Bionic Man. We have the technology. And you know, the reality is we do. Whether it's SpaceX, whether it's the Atlas V, the Delta IV, okay, these ships can send pieces of craft into orbit. The Russian Soyuz, the Ariane.
Who are you getting on this?
The what? And I gotta tell you, sending a tin can
cattle
up.
Cattle or cattle?
Yeah, well, there is that. But a lunar settlement has to be able to grow. And we can't be sending tin can habitats from Earth. That's just not gonna work. It's unsustainable. We have to look at a vision for space that's going to be sustainable. That means we either have to find or dig a cave habitat. And that's going to be the only way. But I'll tell you what. I've gone on long enough. I think we need to start wrapping up for the night.
Okay. I know I would eat dinner.
Yeah, that would be a cool thing to do. It's 8:30. Listen, folks, I challenge you to think about it. Consider this. I really think that everybody, and I mean everybody, has got it wrong. Well, not everybody. I've heard several people actually post ideas similar to what I'm proposing. And what I'm proposing is not new. It is not new. People have said we need to stage ourselves to the moon. People have said for decades we need to build a settlement on the moon. Not a depot, not a base. A base is temporary.
You know,
a depot is military.
What's even worse is that the young generation, younger people in our generation, think, well, it was an obvious thing for them, and they want to know why we're not there already. They thought we were, because it's already in Disney.
And here's the thing. I would venture to say, here's a vision for you. Developments in technology come only when we are pressed, when we are challenged, literally when we are threatened.
That's true.
The big
how we got
jumps don't happen unless we are life and death
up against the gun.
Unless we're up against the gun, it ain't going to happen. And I'm willing to bet that we put people on the moon, and those people get people to Mars. And the people on Mars get people to Titan and Callisto and Ganymede. I'm willing to bet that within 50 years, by the time we get to Titan, I'm willing to bet this vision gets us to the next vision, which is interstellar travel. I'm willing to bet that unless we get into space, unless we've got people out there testing space travel, we are not going to come up with a warp drive craft or faster than light or anything. It ain't going to happen until they're testing their ships in space. Because the cost of doing that on Earth,
they know it's possible.
They know it's possible. But the cost of developing that kind of technology on Earth is so expensive as to be impossible. Because all we can do is theorize. We need a vision that puts people on the moon. Living, breathing, eating, drinking, sleeping, producing on the moon. We need people that then, from the moon, go to Mars. And from Mars, go out to the moons of Jupiter and the moons of Saturn.
Yeah.
And by the time we get there, I'm willing to bet that we have an FTL to go to the stars. But if we don't get a single vision that bases on putting people on these moons, planets, folks, we are going nowhere fast. And I don't care how many countries throw billions and billions of dollars to get into Earth orbit, it will stop at orbit. And it is my concerted opinion that because Mars Inspiration, Mars One, the Mars Society are competing for the same dollars, that none of them are going to succeed for that reason. And I leave you with those thoughts tonight. Think about it. Consider what we ought to do and how we might accomplish a single concerted vision that lets all of these projects succeed, but succeed in a way that continually moves us forward into space. And with that, This is Al.
Joe.
Signing off for the night with a little food for thought. Good night, folks. We'll see you next week.
This is KWOD Radio, and this is Patty Hilstrom. We're signing out for the night. Just to let you know, the Phoenix Comic Con is over, and they have already let everybody know, hey, they're going back. Going back to the same time frame that they did last year, back to Memorial Day weekend. So, they've already put the dates out. It's going to be last weekend of May, 28th through the 31st. So, what else we have going on? We have lots of stuff going on this next week. We've got a con over in Las Vegas I'll be speaking at. That's going to be Combat Con. We'll be talking about chicks and chainmail. One of my favorite subjects next to time travel. So I'll be there the 12th through the 15th. Be back home. Then, of course, the amazing Las Vegas Comic Con is the 20th through the 22nd. Also, I'm going to be on the 20th. I'll be out at the Mesa Urban Garden for Inkzilla from 7 to 10. That's the Mesa Urban Garden off of First Street for Inkzilla, where we have lots of authors out there and artists talking about our cool stuff that we create and how we create it. So that'll be on the 20th. Got the Reawaken panel. It's going to be 6 o'clock on June 19th. That's Thursday. Reawaken. Take a look at it online and find out more information. The Hate Girl Show, one of our favorite gals out there, Ice House Tavern on East Thomas Road. And remember, that's the back of the building, back where the ice rink is. Yes, they still have an ice rink there. So that's 7 to 9 p.m. on June 18th, the Hey Girls Show. We will be featuring Love Lost. So that would be, I think that's it for now. We will definitely have some more show coming on. I just wanted to get you guys up to date with some of the different things. Oh, man, Monster Party Phoenix. Shoot me if I don't do this, but I won't be in town. But Mad Monster Party Phoenix is the 13th through the 15th. And, of course, we'll have to figure out how Al's going to do the show by himself next Sunday from 7 to 9, or I can talk him into it from Las Vegas. Wouldn't that be fun?
We might just do that.
There's two different states going on. So, that and also... We've got to Jungle Survival Marketing that I'm teaching on Wednesdays. I already started on the 4th, but you can still get in on it via Wildflower Bread Company at 7001 North Scottsdale Road in Scottsdale from 6 to 9. That's Module 1. There is a cost. There's lots of really good stuff that you're going to learn, including developing your own media kits and your own marketing plan for your books. So if you're an author, you really need the Jungle Survival. So, yeah, look, Facebook me at pj.hulstrand, H-U-L-T-S-T-R-A-N-D. Remember two T's or they won't find me. That's pj.hulstrand. So if you want to know more information about that Jungle Survival class, let me know. Also, we'll have one coming up online. That's going to be the manuscript to book sales in 8 weeks. Now, starting on the 16th, which is Monday, right after I get back from Vegas. Aren't I lucky? So I get back from Vegas and I jump right into teaching. Lucky me. So with that, you guys have a great night, and so will we. Remember to enjoy the rest of the night, get a glass of wine, just relax, or sit in front of the television, or just, you know, listen to some music. That's always fun. You guys have a great night. KWAD Radio, Patty Holstrin signing out.